Welcome to City Talks, a monthly podcast looking at the big issues facing UK cities and the latest thinking on urban policy. I'm your host, Andrew Carter, from the think tank Centre for Cities. I hope you enjoy the episode. Welcome to this episode of City Minutes. I'm Andrew Carter, and today I'm joined by my colleague, Anthony Breach, and we're going to be talking about the recent Metro Mayor elections. Morning, Anthony.
Morning, Andrew.
So last week we had 8 Metro Mayor elections. Just run us through what happened, what changed, and what stayed the same.
So I think broadly we can see 3 distinct narratives across the country. One in London, one in the south of England outside of London, and then in the rest of the Midlands and in the north of England as well. And, you know, we saw that, to go through those in reverse order, we saw that in the north of England, incumbents did well. So although we saw a lot of the narrative was around the Conservatives making gains in Hartlepool and the Tees Valley, where Ben Houchin did very well, we also saw that Andy Burnham in Manchester was comfortably re-elected, as was Steve Rotherham in Liverpool City region, as was Andy Street in the West Midlands. So this kind of reflects a trend we've sort of seen across the developed world where incumbents seem to have done quite well during the pandemic. But it also shows that the authority and stature of these roles has become more confident and more popular over time as voters have got to know and to understand the Metro Mayor roles. Within the kind of south of England, outside of London, we actually saw some quite surprising results. We saw 2 Labour gains, one in the west of England where Dan Norris is now the new Metro Mayor, and also in Cambridge and Peterborough, where Nick Johnson took the Metro Mayoralty from the Conservative Jamie Palmer. And this sort of seems to suggest a kind of a hidden part of the narrative, which hasn't really been explored by the media, which is that while there's been a continuation of certain trends in the north of England with working class voters trending conservative as they have been since 2010, we've actually started to see more kind of middle class, more affluent, more liberal voters in the south of England turn towards the Labour Party as well, and how those trends shape up over the next few years will affect both local politics and national politics as well. And also then within London, we saw a kind of trend similar to, you know, parts of the north of England and the Midlands, where Sadiq Khan, the incumbent, was re-elected. But it was on a slightly lower vote share on the first round than we saw in his first election back in 2016. So there's 3 different trends, I would say, across the country, Andrew.
Yeah, and it's an interesting one around, you know, what that then tells us about the sort of the surprises or the bigger change. And there was quite a lot of debate, as we said, around, you know, not so much whether, for example, Ben Houchin would retain the mayoralty, but how much more he would increase it. There were obviously questions about whether Andy Street would hang on in the West Midlands, because that was quite a tight contest as well. What struck you? I mean, those are the kind of big trends. Were you surprised by any of them?
I was surprised by the results in the West of England and also Cambridgeshire and Peterborough. I thought that we'd have either a Conservative, Jamie Palmer, be re-elected in Cambridgeshire, and I think also either an Independent or perhaps a Dem in the West of England. So I think those 2 results have been surprising for me. But I think I'm not too surprised, actually, I think, by the results in the rest of the country. I think that if you put together kind of the policy record of the candidates, for example, Ben Houchin, you know, with his pledges to buy the local airport, to bring jobs back into Teesside, to bring a free port onto the Tees Valley. You know, these are all promises that he'd made to voters and he delivered on. And it's meaningful local democracy that you know, voters would see those pledges, see results, and then reward local politicians for that.
Yeah, you were looking at the, as you say, the sort of track record of the incumbents, and you were, you know, you were looking at the manifestos of those that were, you know, vying to be the next mayors in different places. Is there anything we can draw out in terms of what their offer to their, you know, to their place was? Were there common themes, common issues, or things missing? I mean, on that delivery side, we'll get to the kind of politics in a second, but just on that delivery track record, what did you pull out?
I think there were 3 immediate things, right? One is that buses have become very popular. Like we see across a number of the candidates, including Andy Burnham in Manchester, Tracy Grabin in West Yorkshire, where, you know, politicians have pledged to, you know, take control of the buses and build like a London-style transport system using their own resources you know, integrate an urban network for their own city. And that's something which is created and made possible by these new Metro Mayor institutions. I think a second trend which I've seen across the country, which hasn't been so much picked up in the national media, has been the importance of taxation in the elections. So while we saw the contest in London, Sean Bailey versus Sadiq, there was a bit of a divide on council tax. Sean Bailey was pledging to kind of not increase the council tax for the Great London Authority. Sadiq made no apologies, in his words, for increasing council tax to keep Londoners safe. We saw actually across the rest of the country similar and kind of also sharp divides over council tax in parts of the country where council tax makes up a much higher percentage of housing costs than it does within London. So we saw the Conservative candidate in West Yorkshire pledge no new taxes. Similarly, in the West of England, Andy Street also pledged no new taxes, whereas Labour candidates tended to say, emphasise the benefits of their spending programme and, all the benefits that they were going to bring to the local urban economy. And also the third thing I'd noticed was that the politics of housing seems to be slightly different for the Metro mayors than conventional local government. While, I'm sure listeners to the podcast will be familiar with getting leaflets through their door from local candidates pledging to stop new houses and stop developments taking place in their local area, the language and tone often seems to be a little bit different from the Metro mayors. We've seen Andy Street, say how proud he is that, housing supply was double that of the target which he'd been given over his period. We've seen Andy Burnham say that he wants to pledge to minimal greenbelt release rather than to no greenbelt release as he did in his previous manifesto. So I think the politics of this and of housing in particular, it seems to be different at that kind of more strategic and Metro mayor level relative to the district level or kind of the borough level.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, as you said, every one of the mayors, quite happy and very keen to promise more spending in their patch, but much, much more different and much more ambivalent about the raising of those revenues in order to spend it, and they want to get it from somewhere else rather than from their patch. It'll be interesting to see how that evolves over the next time. So let's think about now what it means for the government, what it means actually, interestingly, for the opposition, the Labour Party as well. Let's stick to those two things one at a time, because if you include London, we've got 10 Metro mayors. They cover about 40% of the population there or thereabouts. 8 of them are Labour, 2 of them are Conservative. So, there are quite a few of them. They cover a big part of the country, both from a population point of view and from an economy point of view. What do you think? What's your, guesstimates around how the government's going to respond to, to the mayors over the next few years, particularly, I suppose, when it starts to think seriously about, its levelling up agenda?
I think there's going to be tensions in the government about how they understand the Metro mayors and their relationship with them. And partly that depends upon how the Metro mayors themselves behave. But as you said, like a scorecard of 8 Labour and 2 Conservative will mean that, some politicians in the government will be thinking, and this is broadly kind of an institution which is hostile to the Conservative Party, it's hostile to the government. We shouldn't be giving any more powers or any more resources to these institutions. But I think there'll be other parts of the government which are thinking a bit more strategically and looking at the success of Ben Helchin in Tees Valley and Andy Street in the West Midlands, and seeing that actually providing that strategic kind of urban level of economic geography at the city region level has actually been important for kind of Conservative breakthroughs in areas where they haven't previously had significant traction. So considering that the institutions are popular, in our polling that we did, we saw 83% of people wanted more devolution to at least one policy area to a Metro mayor that they have. I think the government's going to have to, bite the bullet a little bit and, resist the kind of temptation to distance the Metro mayors or to kind of isolate them and really seek to kind of give both power to the Metro mayors as voters want, but then also give more responsibility to the Metro mayors and take some of those kind of tough decisions which are made at national governments that have local consequences down to the Metro mayor level and make sure that voters understand that, if they want their places to get better and if they want actual economic and social change to happen in a local area, the Metro mayor is the person who should be responsible for that rather than civil servants in Whitehall and politicians in Westminster. But the Labour Party,
I think it'll be interesting as well, the sense that the mayors come together more often than they probably previously have, and actually to work as a collective, both to express their views on matters where they have in common. Obviously, much of the issues around transport and skills and planning and housing and business support, it'd be interesting to see how that evolves. Given that, as we say, given that 8 of them are Labour, and given the sort of trials and tribulations of national Labour, what's your sort of reflections on the role of mayors in helping and shaping what the Labour Party does over the next period?
I think the short version is that Labour, I think, needs to take the Metro Mayors more seriously, and I think needs to use the success the Metro Mayors have within their patches. You know, we can see kind of governance successes within within Manchester, within Liverpool. I'm sure we'll see them in the other Metro mayoralties as well, and use that as a justification for voting Labour at national elections. And there's a bit of an unfortunate tendency within the Labour Party where they make these arguments that, oh, the Labour Party is, it's all tracked by the Westminster bubble. The Labour Party doesn't spend anything in the north of England. And voters therefore reasonably conclude, well, I guess the Labour Party doesn't spend anything in the north of England. And I think breaking out of that cycle that they're caught in and actually saying that, look, you know, this is what Labour can do for voters in the north of England. This is what it can do for voters in the south of England. This is what it can do for voters in London. And knitting that together into a coherent platform for government is, I think, the first challenge facing, you know, a challenge and also an opportunity for the Labour Party in Westminster.
Indeed. Well, we shall see. Thank you very much indeed, Anthony. Loads more information all about the Metro Mayors, the elections, what they're up to, our policy priorities, what we were recommending the mayors should focus on now that they're back in their offices, all on our website, centreforcities.org. Thanks very much for listening.
Thank you for listening to this episode of City Talks, brought to you by Centre for Cities. You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher by searching Centre for Cities. Please rate, review and subscribe if you liked what you heard. You can also follow the Centre on Twitter at Centre for Cities, or like us on LinkedIn for the latest updates on what the Centre is up to. If you have any comments on the episode or suggestions for topics we should cover in the future, we'd love to hear from you. Do tweet us or send an email to info@centreforcities.org. The music was from Palace Fires by Johnny Foreigner, used with permission, and all rights are reserved.